Hello and welcome to Almanac, the Oxford Middle East podcast. My name is Piotr Schokas and today I'm joined by Adam Abdallah and Kalyani Nedin Gandhi to talk about unofficial ways of expressing dissent. We discuss what role graffiti, music and football fans played in the Egyptian Revolution and its aftermath, the 2013 protests in Turkey and Morocco and Palestine. اسمع من المفيد عهد كتير وتقاليد المجتمع اجتمع ضد التجديد فكر الناس تعبان عيان ومريض ابحث معايا دور على المستفيد المستفيد هو Gençlerin çoğunda amfetamin, tiridin ya da weed, kokain ya da speed crack. Sana göre güzel ama bana göre değil. Bana göre değil, kafana göre yürü basma yine geber ederi. Kaç 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 paraya bedel yeter artık dönme teker gibi dost ol yeter. Bana geliyorsan dost ol gel. عيش حرية عدالة اجتماعية عيش حرية عدالة اجتماعية عيش حرية عدالة اجتماعية عيش حرية. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our episode today about non-traditional means of expressing dissent. We are going to be talking about Egypt. That's going to be my area of expertise. Adam is going to be doing Morocco and Palestine, and then Kalyani is going to be doing Turkey and Palestine. And I thought the best way to start would be for Adam to give some information on the context of why these non-traditional forms of expressing dissent have developed by describing what the case is in Morocco, because what's happening in Morocco is equally applicable to all the other countries we're going to discuss.
Well, thank you so much, Piotr. This is, I think, a really interesting and important discussion that we're going to have. And one of the ways that you can look at alternative ways of dissent is that in societies where you are policed more, where your discourse is more policed, where your speech is policed, to a large extent where there are not so many official ways of showing your dissent, your disagreement with government policies, you will find it that you will have to look for alternative ways to dissent. Basically, this is a way how political actors or citizens, for example, in Morocco, are protecting themselves. So if they happen to disagree with a government policy and they don't feel that dissenting from it is something that is safe for them, whether it would be physical harm or something that would impede their career or social life, they might look for ways how to anonymize this form of dissent. In Morocco, for example, you know, this can go from music on the internet. So this was like a huge intervention in political discourse and political activism in Morocco was the penetration of Morocco by the internet. Also, obviously, this is what we're going to be talking about later, is the ultras movement and football fans in North Africa in general, but also in Morocco in particular. But I was wondering what it looked like in Turkey, if it's any similar. In Morocco, you can't touch the king, the royal family. These are topics that are off bounds and out of bounds. And if you cross these red lines, then you will be persecuted. So I was wondering what it looks like in Turkey, Kailani.
Well, in Turkey, it looks a bit different in that while, you know, Turkey is now known for having imprisoned the highest number of journalists in the last few years under the AKP government. And there are certain things that, you know, one knows that one can't say, you can't criticize Erdogan in particular. Sort of a unique feature of censorship in Turkey is that it's constantly changing. So even in terms of arts, the things that people respond to in public space and are entertained by and the way history is told, those are always changing. For example, based on towards Turkish Kurdistan, Erdogan has first funded a movie and then banned it later on when, you know, things fell apart. Things change quite a bit in Turkey in terms of what is allowed, what is not allowed. Street art is allowed in protest of certain things as long as it doesn't push the state on certain issues. So it's one of those things that's very changeable and it goes with Erdogan's mood.
So you're saying basically that you're allowed to do graffiti and you're allowed to criticize things as long as you criticize the things the government also does not like.
Exactly. Either they don't like or don't care about at this moment, but they could at some future point. You don't know.
And this is something that is definitely a running theme, not only in Southwest Asia and North Africa, but also everywhere else. Like, as long as you're staying within a certain space which is defined by ideology or hegemony or whatever you want to call it. And this is something that obviously is very exacerbated in countries where laws around free speech are, you know, not as clearly defined or protected as in Europe, for example.
To bring it back to where we were, one of the ways people can express dissent in these countries is, for example, the first thing we're going to discuss today, which is graffiti. Kalyani, you mentioned that during protests, that's like at a time when many of the laws break down a bit and people use those as opportunities to express themselves. So for example, the Gezi Park protests in 2013, like graffiti played a substantial role. Could you go into that a bit?
Yeah, of course. I think in general, you know, there's this debate that always happens between graffiti versus vandalism. When we talk about graffiti? What is vandalism? And I think it comes down to, in some ways, during these big protests, a question of, you know, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter. It's kind of like that. It ends up being something of that nature. But I think what was significant in the Gezi Park protests was how widespread the use of graffiti was. And also, and this is, there's a lot of comparison done between sort of the Gezi Park protests and the Tahrir Square protests. And it's, in Tahrir, you saw more sort of artists taking ownership. A lot of artists came up through creating these beautiful murals and, you know, they were recognized, oh, this is this artist's work, etc. Or they've painted over this person's work. Whereas the Turk in the Gezi Park protests, for some reason, and, you know, there's no telling why or what really is the catalyst for these things, but there were a lot of symbols that were just taken and could be used repeatedly in order to give like a bit of background as to like why some of these symbols were used, basically. But the Gezi Park protests happened in May, over May and June in 2013. Basically, it started kind of small. A local opposition leader, Sirra Süreya, and about 50 individuals decided to protest the conversion of the last green space in Taksim, which was Gezi Park, being converted into a shopping mall. And there was a disproportionate police response and media response, and that sort of snowballed into this massive movement. And what was interesting here was that there was a huge amount of mass media censorship because Erdogan's very good at sort of controlling the media and the narrative that is broadcast in Turkey. But on the other hand, in sort of proportion to that, graffiti, and especially graffiti shared through social media, took on sort of a power of its own. And a good example of that, on one of the days when the protests were really picking up speed, CNN in Turkey instead aired a penguin documentary. And so that gave rise to the name the Penguin Media, the media that won't report the protests. So suddenly you found like images of penguins wearing gas masks being stenciled all over the city. And then the Twitter bird wearing a gas mask. So showing, you know, who is censored, who is not censored. Graffiti was particularly good for sharing on platforms like Twitter, Facebook, and even their version of Urban Dictionary, which was great. You also saw a lot of like the mobilization of pop culture at that time. So one of the things that was written on many of the walls is Tayyip, winter is coming, which of course is a Game of Thrones reference. The significance of saying Tayyip, that's Erdogan's first name. And it's a very sort of, you know, disrespectful way of addressing him. And it's sort of really sort of writing that in a public space is really making a statement, you know.
In Egypt, there was something very similar in that they would basically draw on inspiration from Egyptian history and Egyptian symbols for their graffiti. So there's, for example, quite a famous one of King Tutankhamun dressed as Che Guevara, which is incredibly funny if it wasn't for the quite sad context. And there's also one of Queen Nefertiti wearing a gas mask. And there's also obviously a huge number of pictures, for example, of the Sphinx, as it is like the preeminent symbol of Egypt. And then there's also a very famous graffiti called "The Tank Versus Cyclist," where a tank is facing a bread boy, and anyone who's been to Egypt, especially to like the slightly less expatty neighborhoods, has probably seen these guys